It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loth.
We're all back together again after some little side trips and fun days. So stay with us. I know it's beautiful out, so go out and do your errands in the car and turn us on that way, or just wait until we're done and go out then. This time of year, I talk about it so often, but just another absolutely stunningly beautiful Saturday morning. Just nice to be alive. So enjoy it while it lasts. It'll get hot pretty soon. Everybody knows that. Well, for the regulars, thanks for always being there. You keep listening, we keep talking. That's the rules. And if you're new to the show, whether you found out about it, heard about it, or accidentally stumbled upon it, try to stick around for the whole hour, because we'll promise you you'll pick up some little tidbit of something that you probably didn't know before. And I remind everybody, it is a live call-in show, and you can do your part by calling in 904-222-8255. Callers get priority. This is we're well into year 12 now, and those have been the rules since the very first show, and we do our very best to live by them. So we will discuss all the things we want to talk about, unless you would like to change the subject, and we always love it when people change the subject. And a lot of people I know are kind of afraid to go on a live radio. I suppose it wouldn't surprise anybody if I say all three of us started a little trepidatious, and now it's just like talking to your friends. It's that easy. So if you're thinking about it, try it. We won't bite, I promise. There are also no stupid questions. There are only questions that if you don't know them, a lot of other people don't know them either. And if you ask us anything that's a stumper, we'll get back to you next week after we get into it. So it's pretty easy to deal with us, and I recommend it very highly. All right, this week, kind of an okay week. I was hoping for a little more action in the Dow on Friday, but that didn't happen. But when you consider everything that's going on, I think it's miraculous that things are where they are. So I'll let Adam talk to that.
Yeah, relative to the last few weeks, this week felt calm and relatively stable. It was kind of nice, to be honest. It's been pretty crazy. So I was not disappointed to see a week where we saw it go up, we saw it go down, but no major swings, and mostly ended the week up. So not too bad. Next week, however, we're going to be in peak earnings reports for Q1, the very beginning of it. And a lot of the mega caps are reporting next week, so you could see some real volatility around that. Not guaranteed, but definitely could happen. Most of the indexes are sitting at extreme overbought levels, and that is a big change from 3 weeks ago. And oil is still hovering over $90 a barrel, so I just don't know what to expect next week, but I wouldn't be surprised by just about anything up, down, sideways, and anything in between. So could be interesting, though. This week, we saw the Dow lose a little ground, but the other two indexes were positive. The NASDAQ led the way higher at plus 1.5%. S&P was up 0.5%, and the Dow lost 0.4%. So no big damage done, just a slight down week. Despite the big gains in the quarter, for the year, the gains are more modest, with the Dow up 2.4%, the S&P up 4.7%, and the NASDAQ up 6.9%.
Yeah, in my notes this morning, I made the comment, says, April has been a very good year.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. If you look at the quarter-to-date numbers, the Dow is up 6.2%, the S&P up 9.8%, and the NASDAQ up 15% in this month. So it really has been a pretty good year.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's really screwing up the, you know, like how they had their stats for every month historically.
Yeah.
We've got two just monster Aprils.
Yeah.
Going into those stats. I'm only looking at the median from now on.
Exactly. Those things are interesting to look at, but they do not prove true on each individual year that you look at.
So yeah.
Got to keep that in mind. You can have a year with no Santa Claus rally, but if you look over a long time, most of them have it.
Right.
So it's funny like that.
Well, I was looking at the sell in May and go away thing for 6 months too. And statistically, over a long time, yeah, it's absolutely true. You would have made more money by getting out for those 6 months and staying in the other ones if you could figure out when. last year in the 6 months, the market was up 20%.
Yeah, that would hurt to miss out on that one.
You don't want to miss 20%.
No, no, definitely not. One interesting thing is that some of the other indexes are up much more for the year than the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ. If you look at, mid-caps, you're up over 10%. Small caps are up over 12%. And micro caps are up over 13%. So some pretty good numbers on the other indexes as well. So far, the recent rally has seen the Mag 7 stocks participate. That's something that has not been the case recently. Although they're still well off their previous highs, they have been rallying and bringing the market up with them. Interestingly, not one of the Mag 7 stocks is sitting at an all-time high right now, despite the fairly intense rally we just saw. So that's kind of interesting. The market hit an all-time high, but the Mag 7 has not. One positive sign for the market has been the moves in the semiconductor industry recently. The Philadelphia Semiconductor Index crossed over 10,000 for the first time ever this week, and it's on an 18-day positive streak that totals a 47% gain. That is the best stretch in index history.
Wow.
Every single stock in the index has outperformed the S&P since March 30th for an average gain of 52%. Since March 30th.
Did you notice Intel yesterday?
I saw an article. I wasn't tracking it or anything, but
in the chart I was looking at, I presume this is right, it was up 23.8%.
Jeez.
Yesterday.
That's a good year also.
They did their stats before, and they just blew everybody away.
Interesting.
Yeah, everybody, the big guys are ordering from them and from TI. And they're doing well, too. So, everybody was so down on tech how many weeks ago? Not that many.
Yeah, but semiconductors were really didn't really follow that trend.
True. Mostly been a software.
Actually, that was the next point I wanted to talk about. Good. On the other side of the market are software stocks. IGV, the software index, is down over 19% this year and down 26% in the last 6 months. The volume of trading in this ETF has been off the charts as well, with over 15 million shares trading hands on almost a daily basis. That, to me, says that the speculation about AI's effect on software companies is playing out in real time in the market via this ETF. It's people are just have wildly different opinions on what's going to happen to the software industry due to AI. And I think you can make a valid case on either side of the argument, on any side of the argument, really. But it is interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's crazy because all their profits are up, so everybody's trying to argue about the growth factor, and they're trying to find the bottom. It'll be interesting to see where it is.
You can make a case that AI is going to make them more profitable or put them out of business, and they're both valid. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Did you see that Meta is tracking keystrokes for its employees now? They're about to start. Employees aren't happy about it. I look at it as Disney had to train their own replacements or they wouldn't get their termination and such. Meta's doing the same thing. These people, keystrokes are being logged by AI so that AI could do a better job of doing what they do, thereby putting them out of business.
Jeez.
Isn't that weird?
What times we live in.
You know what? That's for darn sure. All right, much more to come. We've got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
I'm Adam Vanwee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we will have a little bit more of the market wrap as soon as I remind people that the lines are open, 904-222-8255, and you can use that number to try to answer our trivia question, which is, as usual, sponsored by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. Call Paul at 904-636-7888. All right, this one may or may not surprise anybody. I'm not really quite sure, but as usual, it has a point. What percentage of inheritors ages 50 and older spend their entire inheritance in less than 1 year? It's just a whole number percentage between 0 and 100. So you don't get any clues yet. So somebody's got to call in and set the bracket for it or take a lucky guess and just do it. All right, back to the market wrap. Adam had a little bit more to touch on here that's kind of important this time of year.
Yeah, two things. One, we're at the front of the first quarter earnings reports. Just over 250 companies out of just over 2,000 have reported. So far, 77% have beat their earnings forecast and 69% have topped revenue forecasts. 5% of companies have raised their forecast versus 4% that have dropped. Obviously, these numbers are subject to change wildly based on the other 1,700 companies that are going to report. But that's a pretty solid start considering mm-hmm. the backdrop of the war in Iran, especially on the guidance, you know, with uncertainty usually comes lowered guidance or more conservative reports. So far, so good. We haven't really seen that. So if we ended this quarter with those kind of numbers, I think you're going to see the market respond favorably.
I don't see anything that would keep it from happening. You know, anything could happen in Iran, but you don't live your life for anything could happen. You know, for years, I've been saying there are possibilities like a mushroom cloud over Tel Aviv. Then you might want to do something. But short of something like that, these are just short-term events, and they move the market a little bit here and there.
Typically, that's what political events do, and that's been proven time and time again.
Yeah, and we sent our guys over today to Pakistan to not talk to the people who wanted a meeting with them.
That sounds productive.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah. I mean, more productive than lots of other government activity, though.
So. That's true. Yeah. I don't know what he's called in Pakistan, but there's a guy that's kind of in charge of this whole thing, and he's playing intermediary on the thing. And I just hope he has a clear understanding of what comes next if they don't play ball, because it won't be pretty.
We'll see.
Yeah, and I've seen a couple articles lately, rumors of us running short on missiles and such. Don't believe them. Just not so. We're banging them out, and we'll use them if we have to, but I'd sure rather just see them come to their senses.
Really hope that doesn't happen.
You and me.
So economic data this week, it was light but positive. Retail sales came in higher than expected, even when the price of gas was factored out, so that was a big deal. Initial jobless claims remain low, and continuing claims dropped by another 20,000 this week. The relatively new ADP weekly jobs estimate came in strong again. It's showing new job creation running above 200,000 monthly, mm-hmm. which is really, really solid. That would be a great way to kick off May. Several reports also showed individual investors are getting more bullish, which is not always the best news, but it usually happens.
No, I didn't like that one either.
No, but it usually happens when the stock market does well, and it has done exceptionally well over the last 3 weeks.
So. Yeah, and by the way, this next show, we would normally be doing the jobs report, but because Friday is the first of the month, they don't have time to compile it. So the jobs reports will be on the 8th, and we'll report them on the 9th.
Oh, one of those weird exceptions, huh?
Yep.
I didn't realize that.
Sometimes they kind of sneak them in there if they've got 2 days, but with one, apparently they just don't care to guess, which is and maybe ironic.
Yeah, I appreciate them not rushing out a bad report, though. That doesn't seem
ideal. It will be what it will be anyway. So
yeah.
Let's do it.
And it'll get revised anyway.
Got that right, too.
I mean, when is the last one that wasn't revised?
I don't know that
don't remember.
Ever been one.
And the biggest news of the week out in business world, the man so affectionately known as Tim Apple announced his retirement.
Yeah, that was a big, kind of a shock. I didn't know that was in the works. I don't know if anyone did.
September 1st. He had been talking about grooming a replacement for quite a while.
Sure.
Now, the interesting part of that to me is the guy that he handpicked is a hardware guy.
Sign of the times.
Also kind of his opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Yeah. Tim was a very big consensus guy.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Apple, that is. And this guy is not. He's kind of more of a hard driver. And he was notably opposed to a lot of things that flopped, like Apple Vision.
Yeah.
A couple of these kind of side projects.
The car.
Yeah, didn't go. He just like... Tim seems to think this guy has a really good vision of what Apple is in the minds of consumers and has always put his energy there.
Well, it's so good.
It'll be interesting to watch.
Despite Tim Cook's been there for 15 years at this job. And despite his roaring success, there were 37 companies that outperformed him over that time.
Wow.
That's weird, isn't it?
Well, you I mean, think of that I bet there weren't 37 companies that were bigger than Apple that outperformed.
Yeah. No, there weren't. Yeah. There are some that are now. But, you know, Meta hadn't even gone public when he started his job.
Wow.
It seemed, he's been there a long time.
No kidding.
So it seems anyway. I thought that was kind of interesting. So let's keep an eye out for what goes there. But the reason that caught my eye is we've been talking about this for years. The development of Apple, they were basically a 100% hardware company. And when they started switching over to the musical stuff and then they went into the subscriptions, you and I were talking about this many, many times, how the recurring revenue from subscriptions was a great idea. And it grew actually to become half of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a, I would imagine, a resurgence in the hardware field because the guy's got that focus. We'll see how he actually operates. But I have found out one thing over my many, many years of doing this. It's a very, very bad idea, mostly, to bet against Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got the track record for sure. But can they keep it up forever? Probably not, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, people have destroyed brand images as good as Apple in the past.
Budweiser, well, looking at you.
Steve Jobs had that one characteristic. Nobody I've ever seen could do what Steve Jobs would do, which is to tell you that you needed something that didn't exist yet, so he was going to make it for you.
Yeah, it's incredible. I still remember, we talk about this a lot, but I still remember the first time I saw an iPod, and couldn't understand it. The guy who brought it on our trip that we were on was explaining it to me. I was like, I don't get it. And then started listening to music by a tape adapter in the rental car.
Yep,
and I was
too.
Like, oh, okay, this is pretty freaking cool.
Yep.
Like, but it just, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole concept of the iPhone, I remember his introduction on it. And everybody immediately realized, I've got to have one.
Yeah.
So I remember standing in line to get our first one, and it was that bad. It's a shame in many respects that Steve Jobs died so young. He had a lot of years left to watch his own concepts grow and multiply and so on. You know where he came from originally?
No.
His parents were graduate students at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Didn't know that.
And she got pregnant, and they decided they would put the baby up for adoption, and did. And that baby grew up to be Steve Jobs. I bet they are sorry they gave that away. Yeah, you don't have to be that bright to go to the University of Wisconsin. Oh, wait, I shouldn't say that.
Wait a second. Weren't my parents graduate students at the University of Wisconsin?
I think we met there, actually. My old memory serves me right. Anyway, just a couple of interesting tidbits. This is one that's interesting. It's about taxes, and I don't want anybody to forget about taxes yet. There's a guy who thought that his identity had been stolen because he went to file his taxes, and he's from Puerto Rico. And he has one job, and he gets one W-2. But then they found out when he found that there was another W-2 in his name and his Social Security number. And he was worried that the guy was going to rip him off or something, which I guess technically sort of is. But it's somebody who used his Social Security number to get a job. He's never caused any fuss. He pays his taxes, or pays into the taxes, and gets a W-2. But it's not this guy.
Leave it alone. Leave it alone.
I would only leave it alone if I was getting the net money.
Well, no, think about this.
He's
this
getting guy's the paying, Social Security.
Yeah, he's paying for his Social Security. Whatever his wages are, he's juicing that for the – dude, that's huge.
Yeah, that's
funny. Why I'm like, that's the first thought. Leave it alone.
Another
an annuity.
Another
but he's
aside.
Bumping you up a tax bracket, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who are filing early, you have a better chance to catch this stuff in time. This guy's lucky. He's going to get out of it without a problem, only because the guy didn't cause him a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know what they're going to do to his earnings record either. But I went back a couple weeks ago just on a whim and checked my earnings record. I do it every year, two, three.
Sure.
And it's always been perfect. And right there next to the bottom line in 2024 was a zero. Now, I haven't had any zeros for a long, long time.
I had this happen to me, too.
Did you?
And it corrected. They corrected it later.
Yeah. But I wrote them a letter, uploaded it. They got a nice upload site for the Social Security website now. I did it, and I got a letter in the mail yesterday that said that they had corrected it. Thank you. And I went in and checked again, and there it is. So yeah, they're really quite reasonable.
Yeah, but you do need to stay on top of that stuff because it won't always fix itself.
You know, if it's a significant year and a significant working time in your life, that means it's going on to those years that are counting the most, and it will affect your benefits for your life. So just make sure it's right. Check it once in a while. It's easy. All right, we'll be right back after a short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
I'm Adam Banwee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I remind everyone that the lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at a trivia question, which today is, what percentage of inheritors ages 50 or older spend the entire inheritance in less than 1 year? And now I want to throw out a term for everybody, too. It's related, but it's not applicable. Do you guys know what a grasshopper kid is?
I do not.
Son or daughter of a grasshopper. No, I made that part up. A grasshopper kid is a kid who inherits some money and immediately spends it. We've met some of those.
Yes, we have.
Way too many of them. That is not the answer to this question, however, but it's just along the lines of the inheritance. So we'll talk about that a little bit, too. Joey's got something on his mind today that he wants to get into, so let's turn it over.
Hold on. I think we have a phone call.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Let's address that first. Wait.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Got Roger doing the chores today, Marshall, so things are good.
I understand.
Good.
I'm going to take a shot at your trivia.
Sure.
Although I think it would probably equally interesting to know how many of those inheritances are less than $15,000 to $20,000.
But you know, you can make a good argument for doing a study that way. This one was not done that way. In fact, the average inheritance that was in the study was $133,000.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to say 70%.
Well, this is one time I'm really happy that you're a pessimist because that's too high.
Hmm.
Okay.
Interesting.
Good.
Yeah, well, that narrows it down quite a bit.
That is...
What else is happening today?
I wanted to thank Adam for the recommendation of Mint back when that software was available to budget for free. Mm-hmm. And when they went out of business, I switched over to Quicken Simplify.
Mm-hmm.
I just went through saying, okay, what if I don't have income coming in anymore from my previous job before retiring from it? Hey, it's still a positive number.
It should be.
Yeah.
And, and do it with good confirmation. But right. Yes, that product is great. And I highly recommend it if anybody's thinking about doing it. And it's not that expensive.
As I recall, Intuit bought Mint. Let's see.
I believe they did and replaced it with what Marshall
moved it into. I'm sure they wanted their own brand on it.
Intuit has done an awesome job in linking financial information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that they're drawing in the credit card information. The only thing you have to adjust is when you write checks.
Yep.
And it doesn't automatically show up in the bank item. But yeah. That was all great. Well, gentlemen, thank you again. Appreciate your help.
Always fun to hear from you.
That question actually ends.
Okay.
See ya.
You will. Stay tuned.
And interestingly, Intuit's one of the stocks that's getting killed right now.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of people really don't like the company. I personally, I think they have some good products.
Yeah, why don't people?
I don't know. I think they find it like invasive and
reminds them of their bills.
I got about 30 years of Quicken data for Sarah and me. And
yeah.
I can pull up anything you want to know. That's fabulous. Use QuickBooks for the small business. You've been involved in that.
Yeah, I use that.
What I didn't like, and I've heard this from other people, I don't like the QuickBooks online version.
Oh, that's what I use, and I really like it.
Yeah,
I think it's way better than the old school version.
Well, maybe it's just an age differential.
Yeah, I will not use a software program that has to live on your computer anymore. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I can see why. I found that there's some things that always stumbled. Like sometimes I had to get out of it and get back into it to have what I just logged in before appear in my numbers. And I don't know why that is, but I've heard it before. Anyway, I think it is a magnificent company.
Yeah, their products are really, really solid. So,
I agree with they're aggressive and all that. But if you want it to do the work for you, you got to give it some data, right?
But I do understand why the AI thing would be targeting them, because their software is definitely something that I think could be replicated and maybe improved upon by an AI-driven software.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's part of the problem as the world is viewing it right now. Software in general, software is going to write software. There's no other way to put it.
No, it's true.
And it's going to get better and better.
No doubt about it.
And cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah, I think the question is more about, like, how do they make money? Because that's the part that's going to change more so than what you just said. Like, I think the big players are going to continue to be big players. I don't think they'll struggle. I'm speaking very generally, but I don't think they'll struggle to find ways to add value with AI. The question is their subscription model that's a headcount-based thing going to survive that transition, and will they be as profitable on the other side?
For decades, we have joked about, we just make it up in volume, and that started out from an old Saturday Night Live thing. It was called the First National Change Bank.
Yeah. How do you make money?
we can give you 10 dimes or 20 nickels.
We have change combinations you've probably never thought.
Volume. Back in the 80s in the stamping company, we had a couple of those where it was getting harder and harder to make money. So we always said, before we ship any part, we just tape a quarter under the top of it and send it.
but we make it up in volume.
Exactly. but I digress.
All right. If I were to ask you guys, what was the worst year in which to retire over the last 100 years, what would you say?
I mean, the obvious ones that come to mind are like 2007, because the very next year you would have been slaughtered. I don't know.
21?
2021?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 22 is
28, bad, but 19, but nobody did that. Alive today did that.
So when I read the question, my guess was 1929, which was obviously a bad year. The answer is 1968.
Oh, because you had just nothing happen for 10 years?
You had Jimmy Carter coming in.
A really bad – there's more than just Jimmy Carter. I know you don't like Jimmy Carter. there was really bad inflation for a long time.
Yeah.
You had really slow economic growth.
Yeah.
Prices tripled between 1968 and 1983.
Wow.
And you just did not have market growth to keep up with that. Nowhere near it. Inflation peaked at 13.5% in 1980. Now, this you've talked about in the form of mortgage rates, many times.
Oh, yeah. And ask anybody my age what their first mortgage was, and you'll shake
probably
your head.
Double digits.
But remember, prices were much lower, too.
But they were rising at a much higher rate.
They were.
They were. So
it was leading to trouble.
Yeah.
And it got there.
So this research was done by the founder of the 4% rule, William Bengen. And he said, in summary, it was a combination of severely prolonged bear market of the late 60s to the early 80s. But the biggest impact in addition to that was the inflation piece, which just crushed people. Mm-hmm. And, back then, the way the masses thought about investing was not the way they thought about it now. So.
Right.
Beyond this theoretical analysis, the way people were actually invested was probably far worse and for the situation.
And they didn't have access to the right. wide range of investments right. that we have access to today.
Right. And there were, you know, eventually you could get 30-year treasuries at 15% interest, but that was at the end of that period
yeah.
and didn't affect you during the period. So to put it into real numbers, if you started with $100,000 in 1968 as a retiree and you withdrew 4.66% of that starting balance, you had less than $41,000 at the end of just 6 years. That's how bad it was.
Ouch.
Yeah. And so they were using a combination of like real price inflation.
Is that annual withdrawals or a single withdrawal?
It was annual withdrawals of 4.66 based on that 100,000. So basically 4,666, whatever that bought you, he would inflate it against whatever the market did and okay. figured out. Conversely, in 1929, which you would think, I mean, the market went down 89%. The Dow went down 89% by 1932.
Brutal.
And still that was considerably better. If you had done the same exact spending pattern, by the end of 30 years, you had $105,000 in your account.
Wow. Okay.
And the reason for that was, while the Great Depression stunk, there was deflation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you really had a counterforce. So that's
a huge
that
difference. Yeah.
So definitely. People's concerns about inflation matters. I mean, it's a real thing.
Yeah. Harry Dent is still expecting a replay.
We do have a phone call, but we're almost up against a break, so we may yep. want to just hold it over till the next segment.
Yeah, Bob, if you can hang on, we'd appreciate it, and we'll pick you up right afterwards.
We're about a minute and change away from the break, so.
Mm-hmm. The sort of the second half, I guess, of that little analysis has to do with life expectancy. Your life expectancy, on paper, in theory, A, is misunderstood, but it's supposed to be right now the combined population around 79, which, of course, it doesn't include everybody. Mm-hmm. So I was putting together a little something this morning on that, and I found something that somebody said that I thought was just brilliant. Of course, I can't find it. But it was, don't plan on X number of years for your retirement. Make a plan for no matter what, and out at age whatever, 100, 110, whatever you want to use, you still haven't run out of money. That's the only safe way, because people are lasting so much longer today and you don't Definitely. Know if you'll be one of them or not.
Yeah.
We had a client kind of chuckle that we were planning for them to 100 this mm-hmm. week in the office, and we're like, well, look, statistics say that it probably won't happen, but it could.
Yeah, so, statistics also say that there are three things people fear worse than death, and the top one is running out of money. And I promise you, everybody I've ever talked to in our office, that is their worst fear.
For sure.
So even if you're 95 at the time, you don't want to run out of money. All right, we'll be right back. We'll pick up Bob. Don't go away. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
All but one of our lines are open, 904-222-8255. And on the other one, we have Bob. Roger.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Bob. Mr. Bob.
How are you doing?
Excellent.
Hey, Joey, you're coming up with some really good stuff.
Oh, thank you.
I was thinking about when we sat for bond money in Jacksonville for our first home. You know, the interest rates were like 11%.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Talk about, you know, inflationary pressures and, you know, high interest rates.
Yeah.
You know, this market, you know, at 6.3 or whatever, people ought to look at the time when interest rates were way up there for stuff.
Every generation thinks their problems are A, new, yep. and B, only ever happened to them,
yep.
and yeah, it's
and unique,
and
unique.
And worse than the previous
worse,
one.
Yeah.
yeah. It's, yeah, that's exactly. just how life works.
Well, the other part exactly. of that, all young people who are trying to buy a property, they look at it and they find out what the previous owner paid, and they say, oh, I'm too late.
Yeah.
yeah.
And they buy
yeah.
it, and five, 6 years, it's doubled.
Oh, my God. You know, and we sat in rainstorms for 2 days. You couldn't, you know, you had to have a family member sit in line for you. You couldn't. If you had to go to the bathroom, somebody had to relieve you. So
that's hilarious.
That was bad.
The good
hey,
old days,
take,
huh?
Take a quick guess at your trivia question.
Sure.
57%.
Well, there's another time when your pessimism is appreciated because it's even lower than that.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm shocked.
I'm really floored. Yeah, but,
I thought it was going to be north of 60.
You know, you hear stories and you talk to people, and you start to think that everybody's kind of goofy out there. But then sometimes you put a bunch of data together and look at it, and, you know, Americans aren't all that bad.
Yeah.
Well, I was my reasoning about the people that win the lottery, and they're broke, you know,
yep.
a year later. It's got to be at least 50%.
Yeah, we know some lottery people who've done very well, and we've all read the stories. I did a Google search, or an Amazon search, I mean, it for books about lottery winners who failed. Pages and pages come up.
Yeah.
It's really? Very common.
Wow.
Well, you know why? There are a lot of them, for sure.
Yeah.
But the ones who win and do it right, you don't know about them.
Nope.
Yeah.
No.
You don't even know their names.
They're quiet.
One of the things I have to watch out for, my wife and I will buy a scratch-off every once in a while, like if the kids just have a rough week and we need something to kind of take the edge off for Friday. We'll get a scratch off, but I got to remember that we kind of have a proximity bias because we're around a bunch of winners.
Yeah.
Like we work with people who've won
different
things, and it makes it seem like it's more likely to win than you are.
The first rule of buying a lottery ticket out where we all live is you buy it at that little Publix down on beach. Remember that one? Practically two in a row, big ones that were sold at the exact same Publix.
Hmm.
Yeah. Interesting. We're
buying a lottery ticket as a pleasure.
Yeah. Very good. Can we quote you on that one?
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Good. My granddaughter works there. I'll tell her.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Enjoy the program. I'll let you guys go. Bye.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks. Bye. All right. So 57 is too high.
Isn't that
interesting? Little warning to people. This actually happened in Dallas, but it's good all over the place. The Secret Service seized 13 card skimmers in Dallas and aborted $13.5 million in fraud. And the way these things are done in many respects is at gas stations.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've never heard of one around me. But
there has been one in Ponte Vedra over the years that I know of. There might have been others. But when you're using a credit card at a gas pump, it's a better idea to do the tap version.
Which is becoming more common, Yeah,
they can't skim that. But if you start to put your card in and anything jiggles or is loose or anything like that, don't do it. Pay inside and tell them they got a problem out at the pump.
Yeah.
That's the first sign, apparently, is that it isn't a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with cards, you're really not responsible for fraud and theft. All the major credit card companies will not hold you accountable for that. So you're pretty well protected, but you still don't want it to happen because it's a major headache.
Yeah,
and you got to call a phone number and be on a wait
forever.
You don't want to do.
And then you got to change. You got to get a new card and then change all your prepaid things that are linked to that card to a new number. It's a real headache.
Yeah, so. There are other places that use like ATMs and any point of sale terminals are also here. And if you are doing a debit card, see if you can use it as a credit card. All right, we have Bosco.
Another fabulous, fabulous show.
Thank you, sir.
I'm pedaling down to New Smyrna. Cool. And the weather's, you know, just what it should be, you know.
So nice out.
It is. It is. So the bugs are low.
Yeah.
The sun is hot, you know.
Breeze is cool.
People pay big bucks for this kind of weather.
No doubt about it.
We take it granted sometimes.
Yep. They can come in to Florida and spend as much as they want to. Sure.
And I'm thinking 35%.
Well, now we have what's known in the business as a bracket, because that's a little low.
That's a good bracket, huh?
It's a real good bracket. So
excellent.
Anybody out there who's paying attention, it's getting easier by the minute here.
There you go.
All right.
And the time's getting short. Good. Y'all have a great day.
Well, enjoy your little road trip. It doesn't get any better than this.
True there.
Take care.
Until then, I'll see you next weekend.
Okay. Take care. Bye. Thanks.
You bet. Ciao.
And I'm going to go another couple of minutes. There's still time for somebody to call in and try to hit it. But there's a point I want to make in this whole thing, too. Let's see.
There are good ways to blow an entire inheritance, too, like paying off high interest credit card debt or something like that. I would be 100% in favor of doing something like that.
That is done quite frequently. There's a term that I had never heard before called mortality salience phenomenon.
Okay.
Never heard of that.
I can't even imagine what this
means. No, I don't have a clue.
This is experienced apparently by some people who inherit money, and the people want the death reminder to go away, therefore they spend the money. Now, is that rational or is that
very emotional, but I understand it.
Yeah, that they don't want to be reminded of the death money. Now, I take a quite different view of that. Okay, well, we have Leroy. That's what we were hoping. Leroy.
Good morning, folks. How are you?
Good morning. We're great. How are you?
Hey, I heard the low was 30. I was 35. What was the high?
57.
57. How about 42?
How about 42? 42 is a ding, 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 ding. Exactly right.
Wow.
I had a bracket of 41 to 43, but you didn't need it.
Yeah. Go get a money ball. Pick some numbers.
Yeah. Like they say, a blind hog finds an acorn every once in a while.
You got that right. All right, we'll have Roger put you on hold, get your information, and you enjoy the rest of the day.
You've already got it.
That we do. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Just he can take care of the phone itself. And thanks, Leroy. Tell Pat we said hi. Let's see. Oh yeah, so this is a funny one. The average was the $133,000 that I mentioned earlier, and I view that more, you know, unless you've got a situation like Adam was talking about, you're deeply in debt with high interest rate stuff, fine, do it. I would look at it as if you can pad our retirement for later and we got a chance to grow, I would, instead of missing that person, I'd just be thanking them every day of my life because most people start too late and put in too little. And if you can get it bumped up with an inheritance, you should be nothing but grateful that that person took the time and caring to include you in the will.
Yeah.
I
think that's a much more rational and less emotional way, but it that's just not how it works in the real world. Like, people get very emotional around money, and then especially money that involves the passing of a loved one.
And you know, only 15% of heirs spent some and saved some. The rest either saved it all or spent it all.
That's interesting.
Isn't it? That
I would have guessed that was the biggest category.
I would guess that'd be 40, 50% anyway.
Yeah, like go.
I retired my mortgage and then put some in the rollover.
Or
like
even
inherited IRA.
Took a big trip and then saved the rest or something like that.
Yeah, but that's not apparently how it goes very often.
Interesting.
It was done by American College of Financial Services, and it's readily available. You don't have to believe me. And see, Grasshopper beneficiaries spent an extra $265 for every $1,000 they inherited.
An extra?
$1,000.
So they inherited $1,000, they spent $1,250. That's funny.
I always try to be a little amusing once in a while. All right, so who's got a grasshopper, huh? Some people. Let's see. Oh, there's another one. There's a disturbing trend now going on. In 2023, there was kind of a jump in people who, when they were changing jobs, took their 401k balance and spent it instead of rolling it into the new employer plan.
Whoops.
Ouch.
That's really, really not a good idea, people.
It is not.
And the two best years in market history, but other than that, it's probably a lot of fun.
Yeah. There's another phenomenon that I won't get into big time till next week, but you know, if you get divorced and one of you is in a plan, you're allowed to split the 401k balance by having the spouse open up a plan account. But there's a big but in this one. Both spouses then have to start taking RMDs the day the employee has to take it. So if a spouse is 5-10 years younger, that would accelerate it. You get out of it with an IRA, all of which I will get deeper into when I've got more than 11 seconds to talk. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go out and enjoy this fabulous day, and we will see you next week right here at this time. This is the Banway Financial Hour.